Hello and welcome to the season two finale of Travel Genius. I'm Mark Elwood.
And I'm Nikki Eckstein. We're the Travel Geniuses.
Yes, we are. And this week, we're talking about taking trips to somewhere that visitors can claim is truly untouched by tourism so far. Space.
Plus, we'll be joined by Alison Mosshart, the artist, author, and of course, rock star member of The Kills.
All that and more on this week's Travel Genius. Before we start this week, are you a little weepy, Nikki?
I don't know that I'll say that I'm a little weepy, but I am a little sad, I will say.
Why are you sad, Nikki?
Well, Mark, it's the last time that we're going to be in the studio for season two. And quite honestly, we've just had so much fun, I don't want it to end.
Me either. And I'm sure every listener doesn't want it to end. So I'm just going to say to them, don't worry, it's not going to. And you won't have to wait so long for season three to pop up in your feeds. We promise. Please keep checking those feeds.
Yes, because season three is already on our schedules. We are full steam ahead with it. And we will be back online by early summer. We promise.
You know, early summer does feel like a long way away, Nikki.
Does it feel too far away, Mark?
I mean, so far.
Well, how about this for far away? Why don't we talk about space? Virgin Galactic has announced that it'll be sending its first customers to space next year after so many years of hyping this up. And it's going to cost, what? $250,000 per ticket.
I must admit, I did think people had already gone and just not talked about it. It's been going on so long.
This has been the never-ending story, literally. But okay, $250,000 per ticket, $250,000. You don't get a hotel suite. You get a spacesuit. And it's this was kind of the story of a few months ago. It's being designed by Under Armour. It's got all of these different considerations built into it. You get a whole lot of training, the ultimate bragging rights as soon as you book your ticket. Of course, we have no idea who's going, but rumored astronauts in waiting include, theoretically, Angelina Jolie, Tom Hanks, and yes, Victoria Principal, a.k.a. Pam from the original series of Dallas.
How is she one of the first passengers? Good for her.
Good for her is right.
But those Dallas residuals must be pretty, pretty good.
Who would have thought? Well, these people apparently have pretty good company in, you know, real life travelers like you and I. According to the app Trip Scout, which is a really good travel community, by the way. It's a fun one. They've polled several thousand members to see what people think about going to space. And it's a mixed bag, but there's surprisingly positive feedback.
So what did they say? Because I'm really on the fence here about this.
I know. I don't have the desire personally, but 84% of the polled travelers at least registered an interest in visiting space. All right. But there was a caveat. They said they don't want to be pioneers. They don't want to be on the first wave. 82% of travelers said that they would only go once they felt that it was safe enough, and meaning once Virgin Galactic hit 1,000 flights. That was their critical threshold.
So 2099.
Who knows, right? 23% were okay with it once Richard Branson himself went up and came back safely, which was, you know, a different threshold for safety. I don't know. What do you think, Mark?
I'm totally with the 82%.
Yeah.
I don't. This is one of those moments where I don't want to be an early adopter.
No.
I'm very happy not to be send the first Instagram from space, but also to stay alive.
I personally have no real desire to go through the physical experience of getting there. As much as it must be truly powerful and world-changing, earth-changing, mind, or whatever you want to say about it, all of the things, I don't want to do it.
But I think it's because I think we're all charmed by Richard Branson. He's a charismatic leader. But people have been quite severely injured in the trials. It has not been without its problems and human costs. And I think the blue skyness of it is wonderful. But I don't think we should be too naive about how complicated space technology is. There have been space disasters for a reason.
Of course.
It's really, really complicated.
I think you're hitting on an important point, and maybe this is exactly why I don't want to do it. I was born the year that the Challenger exploded, mm-hmm. Not to date myself. But, you know, these things stick with us, and we can't ignore them in the face of what would otherwise be a very interesting vacation, if you can call it that.
I do think it's interesting, though, Branson very much has stolen the thunder or the oxygen of Space Race because he's such a brilliant marketer.
He really is.
You could learn anything from him. But he's not the only billionaire toying with space travel.
Well, you have to be a billionaire to toy with space travel, right? But you're right. There are two others, Elon Musk, of course, and Jeff Bezos. So why don't you talk us through some of the things that they've got going
on? I'm just picturing someone with a big white cat stroking it, going, I am a billionaire interested in space.
Austin Powers style?
Very much. Dr. Evil would be living, would run one of these companies.
I think he may have even. Anyway, SpaceX, Elon Musk's company, was founded in 2002, which is like forever ago at this point. And it's been launching rockets since 2008. It was the first private company to fire a rocket into space. But of course, it's now launched more than 100. And it's still kind of working towards this grand goal, even after those 100 launches, right?
I mean, it says that it's BFR, which I won't explain what those acronyms stand for, given that it's Elon Musk. But the BFR apparently will head into space in 2023, and it does have a very high-profile passenger who is one of the... Yusaku Maezawa is one of the richest men in Japan, and he has just stepped down from running his fashion retail company in order to be part of this project. He's foregone his enormous Gap-like empire to train with Elon Musk's company.
This is so crazy. So during a recent press conference, he actually said that one of his main reasons for doing all of this was because he knew that he needed a few years to train for a voyage that will apparently happen in 2023 if all goes to plan. And so he's literally spending the next 3 to 4 years going through the physical process of preparing for space travel. I mean, who's got time for that if it's a vacation?
Can you imagine? You know who else is preparing for it? The buffest billionaire in America, Jeff Bezos, who also has a space exploration company. His is called Blue Origin. Its first spacecraft is called New Shepard, which is named after Alan Shepard, the first American to go into space.
This all sounds very romantic. Of course, they've only used crash dummies so far. So let's nix the romance right there. But 2020 seems set to be the year where they actually send human passengers on quote-unquote jaunts into space.
I'll believe it when I see it. I think it is fascinating that all three of these companies are founded and the pet projects of very big egoed billionaires. Jeff Bezos, Elon Musk, Richard Branson are all such personalities, and it shows you what a sort of ultimate goal space must represent. It feels very testosterone infused.
100%. No, it 100% does. It's this desire to plant the flag on the moon, right?
There are so many Freudian things I'm sure we can go into about this. But instead of doing that, I think we should prep our guest for this episode, who I think is adventurous enough that she would probably get on that rocket.
She might do it, and she could have a really big ego like all of these other billionaire dudes, but she really doesn't, and that's my favorite thing about her.
She takes the title of most traveled travel genius ever because she's a traveling musician. She's a member of The Kills with Jamie Hintz, as well as the Dead Weather supergroup with Jack White. And she logs, just wait for this, it makes my eyes water to think about it, 500,000 miles in the air each year.
Of course, we're talking about Alison Mosshart, and she's more than just a musician. Just. Mosshart is a prolific artist, author, and her latest project is a multimedia book that focuses on another one of her passions, which is cars. It's called Karma. Do you get it? Karma.
Karma.
Karma. The love letter to autos is a fitting work from the daughter of a car dealer.
And she loves driving, so let's bring her in.
And welcome to Travel Genius. We're so happy to have you.
Thank you very much for having me.
Alison, we have a little rule I'm sure you've heard in previous episodes. Nikki, ding the bell. That is the sound of a genius moment.
That's the sound of success.
No pressure.
Okay.
When you give us a particularly brilliant tip, Nikki will ding her bell. And then at the end of the episode, we will tally your score.
Wait, I thought there's no pressure here. Now this is a game.
Now it's a game. Whether you feel all the right. pressure is up to you, but we have had our fair share of highly competitive people on the show. Mm-hmm. So again,
okay. all right.
When we say no pressure, we're winking at one another here in the uh-huh. studio.
you can't see us.
No, I can't.
All right. Well, we'll dive in because we know that you've got a lot of fun stuff right up your sleeve. Tell us, first and foremost, about the thing that you always pack, that you never leave home without, and that is 100% rockstar approved for waking up feeling super groovy.
Well, I mean, I always bring just to keep myself alive. Is that what you mean? To
yeah.
feel super groovy is just to basically survive. I always bring Green Vibrance, which is this greens powder, and put it in like soy milk or juice or water or something and drink that. And, you know, if I have to go through like a whole day or 2 days or something where I don't get to have normal food at normal times in a normal life, I just drink that. And that's good. And then I feel like at least I might not feel great, but my insides and everything else. I mean, I just imagine that I'm healthy.
So what is it?
It must be. It's like tons and tons of different greens and spirulina and vitamins and all your vitamins and minerals, everything. It's everything in a tiny little like sack.
Does it taste gross? I'm just imagining it tasting gross.
It tastes so good to me.
And you, what, it's powder and you just kind of mix it with water and you shake it up and you're done?
Exactly, girl. Ah. That's what you do. Yeah. But I really like, I mean, if I'm so lucky as to have a blender, a Vitamix, then it's really, really good to put that in with like half a frozen banana and some ice and,
ooh,
you know.
To that cover up the taste.
So we just ran.
No, but then it just tastes like ice cream. It kind of has like a sort of vanilla-y kind of flavor to
okay.
it. I don't know. I swear to you, it doesn't taste bad. People look at my drink and they go, that looks really disgusting. And then I make them taste it and then they're into it.
We just
and they're embarrassed that they're into it after having such a, you know, giving me so much. So, yeah.
We just ran a story about the secrets of LAX, the airport. And so we have this columnist that kind of goes undercover in these awesome hospitality jobs. I mean, I don't know how awesome it is to be a TSA employee, but he did it. And one of the things that he was laughing about was the number of little Vitamix type blenders, the little bullet ones that people try to carry yeah. through their suitcases when they're leaving from LAX.
Was it you, Allison?
That was you.
Get busted?
That's really funny. What are they trying to take that in their carry-on? Little
yes.
blades? Motorized blades?
Yeah, people are dumb sometimes.
No, I'm not an idiot at all. I would never do that.
But you don't check, you don't carry on, right? You're a checked luggage kind of gal?
I check luggage. I carry on. I take as much stuff as I can possibly carry.
See,
everything.
I love this. You're a maximalist when it comes to packing,
yeah,
aren't you?
Absolutely.
Tell us the secrets. Why?
Because I don't like not having what I want, and I think it's really boring to have to go buy everything. I know it's like available, but half of it isn't, and it just makes me happy to know. I mean, when you live out of a suitcase forever and you travel 300 days a year when you're touring, you bring everything because you're moving constantly and you're busy, and it's so awesome to have everything there. I mean, I open up one suitcase and it's basically like a painting studio inside and a recording studio. I have all my stuff. And I like my stuff. I don't want your stuff. I don't want random stuff. I want my stuff.
I think you're making a point that people who travel full time like you have will empathize with. That there's a sort of hierarchy of people who only do carry on and somehow they can survive that minimally. And you know what? When you're away from home,
I think those people are boring.
And to your point, they're also consumerist.
Yeah, they don't mind shopping constantly in every single city that they get to for the most boring things. You know, like, I don't want to do that. I really want to get to somewhere and get going with my life.
I'm just going to give you a point here. I think there's a really interesting counter thought here that, like Mark was saying, it really runs against the grain of a lot of the advice that we get. I think people get fed up and impatient about waiting at the luggage carousel. But at the end of the day, if you can really settle into a place and feel yourself and feel one with your environment faster, then this is a totally worthwhile strategy, especially for someone like you that literally lives out of a suitcase.
Yeah, I don't mind waiting for my baggage.
So do
I don't mind.
Do you pack the blender then?
No, I don't pack any kind of like cooking supplies.
Except
no.
for the green
camping.
Vibrance.
I'm not camping. Like shows. You know, I'll leave it to like backstage people to have a blender or not have a blender. It's okay. I can just put this stuff in a bottle and shake it. I don't need any crazy gear. It's all right. I have a friend who travels with a waffle maker, and that makes me laugh so much. It's
a waffle
the heaviest
maker?
Thing. Yeah, we're going on a trip together, and she's like, "Allison, should I bring the waffle maker?" Stacy,
no.
Don't.
Under what circumstances?
We're gonna find. There's gonna be waffles. I get like we can find a place that'll mix. So you know. I do pack everything, but I'm not that bad. I don't pack the waffle maker.
You draw the line at the waffle iron.
I do.
I think even I'm with you on that. Okay, look, you know what I'm also with you on, Allison? Tell the world about Barocca. British listeners, Australian listeners will already know. But inform, save everyone else from the next hangover they might get with Barocca.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think everyone in England and Australia already knows about Barocca because it's quite a thing. But when I moved to London, when I was like 20, I went to my doctor and my doctor said, look, you need to drink one of these. You need to dissolve one of these orange discs in water every day and drink it and you'll never get sick. And he's kind of been right because I've been doing it pretty much since then for a long time. It's been way too long to mention. And I really don't get sick. I rarely get sick. It doesn't work 100% of the time, but it is, again, like a multivitamin in a drink. You see how I like to drink all my vitamins? I much prefer it. It's so quick.
I'm sorry. I think there's a hidden benefit here that we're not discussing, which is that when I travel, my best habit for staying healthy at home goes out the window, and that is chugging water.
Oh, good point. Yes, yeah.
I tend to, God, one summer I was in Israel and I got clinically dehydrated, meaning I ended up literally confined to a bed for 2 weeks.
Really?
I mean, pretty much. I was
what
at a friend's
house.
I was at a friend's grandparents' house. Nothing. I was in 40 degrees Celsius plus heat every day. And I just
And you just
didn't
refused
drink enough
to
water.
Drink water. You refused.
It wasn't even a refusal. Even... I was too busy living my best life. And I didn't realize the damage that, you know, just happened by virtue of the sun.
You didn't notice your fingers shriveling and everything getting a little strange?
I thought I was just looking skinny and fabulous.
There you go.
Tell us, Allison, you also, I love, Barocca is this sort of Alka-Seltzer-y, orangey thing, which will stop you getting hangovers, it'll keep you rehydrated, it'll keep you, but you also sometimes mix it with alcohol. You make a Barocca
tini. Yeah, so, you know, I like to drink Barocca when I have a hangover, but one of the ways to sort of, you know, have fun and cure that as well is to mix tequila with Barocca. So you're getting your vitamins, your hangover cure, and your cocktail at the same time.
But
so I'm all about multitasking. It tastes really good, too.
Would you ever do a green Vibrantini?
No.
Okay, that answers the question about how it tastes.
Yeah, no. That something about that just turns my stomach thinking about it. I don't know. I need like clear. It's got to be clear. It can't be, you know, green vibrance isn't. I would not call it a clear liquid when you mix it. It's you can't see through that. So no.
I would encourage folks, I always pick up a job lot of Barocca. You can buy it in the States now in certain drugstores, but I pick up a job lot of Barocca in Boots in London every time I go back because I'm requested to bring it. So I'm really like a Barocca mule for people here.
Yeah, and they're heavy. They're not light. I know.
They're heavy?
Long
tubes. It's heavy.
Oh, really? Well, you can unpack them and take one or two.
We'll tweet a picture of Barocca for
people. Yeah, please do.
So then you can see. I'll bring my stash.
I've heard of it, but I've never tried it. Now I'm going to have to try it.
It's a weighty disc. It is. Yeah.
Clearly. So you... Okay, kind of continuing on your liquids and food and packing everything, because this is a theme that apparently we can discuss for an hour. You have a coffee and wine thing that actually has nothing to do with ingesting coffee and wine, and I'm kind of obsessed with it.
Yeah, so I like, you know, I like to paint backstage. I like to paint when I'm traveling and in hotel rooms and stuff. It's sort of very good for my head to be doing that. And sometimes I don't have paint, or sometimes I'm at a restaurant, or sometimes I'm backstage and I don't have paint. But I always have coffee and wine, red wine, and it's really an incredible substitute for paint. They have so much pigmentation, and some of my favorite paintings I've ever had in art shows of mine have just been totally just coffee and wine paintings.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
That's quite
useful. They
look
really, really cool.
You can ask people, because I love the idea that you finish your coffee in a French cafe, you're inspired, and with whatever the dregs are, you can paint
something. It's so fun. Where did you come up with this idea?
I don't know. I've been doing it since I was a kid, you know, just sitting in a diner or something, and your coffee gets cold, and then you stick your finger in it, and then you're like drawing on the napkin or the placemat or something. And if you have a black ink pen, you're really, really going, because once you mix that with a little water too, you've just got all sorts of things happening. It's
great. Do you have a collection of coffee and wine paintings on cocktail napkins from airplanes?
No, I am not inspired to paint on airplanes. I'm pretty furious, and I want to get off.
That's kind of a shame to me. I would challenge you to try to find inspiration on an airplane and then show us what you come up with.
I don't have enough elbow room. I don't like people sitting next to me in general, and I don't have enough elbow room, and I can't sort of like, I don't want to talk about it either. If someone sees me doing it and they're like, what are you making? I'm just going to lose it. I don't want to do it.
It invites too much conversation.
No. I like to really get on the plane, put my headphones on, and watch 6 movies that I've never seen and never would see ever in my life, and just do that and just make the time go. And then,
do you cry when you watch movies
sometimes
on a plane?
Isn't that so weird? That's some weird science. I don't know what that is. You get so emotional on a plane.
It's so true.
Even the happiest movies are so sad. I don't know why.
So I want to arrest you from this reverie, Alison, and I want to talk about another kind of art and the souvenir that you always get everywhere you visit. There's something really lovely about turning around something many seasoned travelers might sneer at. What do you do?
Yeah. Well, I love taking photographs, like proper 35 millimeter, you know, film photographs in a camera. And I travel with a lot of film and a lot of little point and shoot cameras. And I take pictures everywhere I go. And then when I get home, I mail all the film away. And, you know, it's wonderful because I kind of, by the time I get home, I can hardly remember where I've been because I've been like 50 or 60 places. And then a few weeks later, I get all the film back. And it's like, it's a complete surprise. You would never know. I mean, I can't believe I was with that person, or I was at that bar, or I did this, or I saw that. And it's really, really nice. It's such a great surprise. And I have a fear that if I didn't do that, I wouldn't remember half of the things that I did. So it's great. It's great. That's the best souvenir. It's better than buying a postcard or, you know, anything like that, that you look at it and you go, I know the name's on here, but I don't really know what that is.
Do you forego shooting with a smartphone?
No, I do it a little bit, but I really early on when I was a BlackBerry person for a really long time. I love BlackBerry. I could type 1,000 miles an hour. And then I got an iPhone and I was like, well, I guess it's okay. I mean, I have a camera now. That's kind of cool. And then I noticed really quickly that I never cared about any of the pictures I took. I never looked at them again. And I certainly never got them printed. And they just, for some reason, don't seem real or safe to me. Like, I will definitely lose them. And there's actually just no point. So,
two things here. One, I have a baby at home, and so I'm guilty of taking a bajillion, like literally a bajillion photos every single day on my phone. And I've recently started sending them out to get printed. I just use Shutterfly or my local pharmacy or whatever. I don't know. You probably use something a little bit better if you're mailing.
I'm very curious to know how they come out, like what they look like.
The Shutterfly ones don't always print to size the way that I would like. Like sometimes they get cropped off in funny ways. But by and large, I'm pretty happy. And I'm happier to have, you know, a handful of weirdly cropped images than none at all. I like having the tangible one.
You do me a favor and just set one of those prints in the sun and see what happens.
Ooh.
I'm just curious. I'm curious to know if they are like on photo paper, like if they're going to last.
I will do that and report back.
So, Allison, I hope you heard the ding.
Yeah, because it was hidden in there.
Nikki did give you a point, and I think what you were encouraging people to do with an analog camera is to relive your trip when the photos come back. It's such a retro idea, but there's a really lovely moment of saying, you know what, I'm going to stay in the moment, take some photographs, and then when I get home, I'm going to get moments coming back to me as I go through them. And it's such a lovely, yet very counterintuitive thing to do today.
It's really great. It just feels really, really good. It makes you happy. You know, it's the simplest thing. And, you know, when I write a lot on the road. I write in journals and write. And I take photos at the same time. And it's kind of fun sometimes when I'm trying to figure something out about somewhere I was or what happened. I've got all these pieces. Maybe I have a painting, you know, from 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And then I have a photo from like 4. And then I have a journal entry that I wrote at 3 a.m. And I'm like, I can totally piece together my day. If I was accused of murder or something like that and I needed to do that, I have
alibis.
All of the things I need. Yes.
Well, I think we work so hard to create the perfect vacation for ourselves or to squeeze as much as possible into our moments away. And part of our obsession with taking photos, I think, is to be able to remember better all of the things that we worked so hard to create. But we get home and we forget about it. And then the high comes crashing down in this really sad way. And I think what you're onto is a way to relive the magic and to extend the high of your trip well after you've come home. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's awesome.
You know what would also extend the high of my trip? A portrait of me done by a street artist from Paris. You, even though you're an artist, you don't sneer at this. This is what I was curious about. I love you mentioned the photographs, but tell us, you get cartoons done on the street,
right?
This
is so funny.
Yeah. You know, I mean, sometimes I'll be like in a European town somewhere or somewhere, wherever, and I'll be I like to walk a lot. And in any town that I don't know, my first like port of call is to go get lost for a while and just walk around and see what's around. And I love running into those artists on the bridge or in the alley who are painting portraits or cartoons or doing just terrible drawings. and my favorite is to find the worst one I can find, and then I'll go back to the hotel and I'll like pick my outfit and I'll get all excited and I'll get my cash and I get really nervous. I mean, I feel like I'm trying out for like a film or something. I'm like, I hope that they like me, I hope that I can sit through this. And I approach, that is the coolest souvenir ever. And so I've been collecting those just very bad drawings of myself from all over the world.
So funny. What do you do with them?
I just roll them up and I keep them. Again, it's like one day I have a couple of plans, which I don't want to talk about because then everyone will know about it. But I have a couple of plans art-wise to do with those things. I need more of them. I want to wait until I have like, you know, like 80 or something.
Oh, my God. Do you remember where they all come from? Is there something that you use as a prop for each one? Like, is there a baguette in the one from Paris or I don't know?
No props.
No props.
Just my very uncomfortable look on my face. That is my prop.
But it is a lovely... The thing about a portrait like that is it's a very lightweight souvenir. We always think about, do you want to tote things around? It's literally just a piece of paper. But there
is
something very evocative about it. So I love that you do that.
It feels so, God, it's unnerving, I have to tell you. I mean, if you've never had it done, it's really unnerving. It's like doing a photo shoot, but worse. I mean, you can't move, and it's for a while.
So recently, you know? I've actually heard really glowing reviews of a company called Flightographer, which is like the very opposite of the thing that you're talking about. It's where you hire a professional photographer in the destination where you're traveling to take photos. Ideally, this is like a family thing or a couple or a special occasion or something like that. And you can have professional portraits taken, you know, in a very special place in a beautiful backdrop, whatever. But people have been really taking to this idea and commissioning the most beautiful, like holiday card-esque family portraits in places all over the world.
Wouldn't you find that so stressful, worrying about the outfit I had to wear for the
professional
photographer? I agree.
And like the hair, I find it really hard to do my hair in a hotel room.
This doesn't sound like a fun vacation to me. That sounds like you're working.
So we also, I know, we've already had a friend of Bourdain on this season, Eric Repair, who talked about traveling with Anthony. And I know he was also a friend of yours.
Yeah.
Tell us about the fact that his suitcase was bulletproof and what you learned about travel from Anthony Bourdain.
I mean, that is really, that is, you've just said it. His suitcase was bulletproof and he was very proud of that. And he mentioned it to me on a number of occasions that everything would be fine because his suitcase was bulletproof. And by the way, that suitcase was not very big and he was rather tall. So I don't know how he was going to use that in the event that he was being shot at, but he would have had to just pick a section of himself and just go with that. But yeah, he was really, really into his bulletproof suitcase. I can't remember who made it, but I've kind of always wanted a bulletproof suitcase since.
So what do you travel with?
Oh, two suitcases that you can definitely shoot through. I mean, for sure.
So don't hold them up to your chest, basically.
No, I use Tumi suitcases. Those are my favorite. I have never found another suitcase I like more, and I love that company because I travel so much and my suitcases are handled so much by so many baggage handlers and things break. And everywhere I am in the world, I can just walk into a Tumi and say, can you fix this or can I have another one? And they give me one and it's incredible.
Settle a debate for Mark and I. Two wheels or four?
Sure. It depends. If it's really a big, heavy suitcase, four.
Ah.
If it's a carry-on,
this is very diplomatic
two.
Of you.
Mm-hmm. Long-time listeners will know that Nikki and I, it's like the Sharks and the Jets. I'm team two wheels. She's team four.
I get the two wheels. I was always with you. But when you have to lean and pull on two wheels and your suitcase weighs like 75 pounds and you've got to walk like 2 miles through an airport, that really sucks. There's no way around it. But if it's on four wheels, it immediately removes 30 pounds. That's what it feels like to my body anyway. It's like I can push two of them at the same time. But carry-ons are little, they're light, and two wheels is great because you can just like whip that thing around. It's all good. I don't need more wheels than two on that.
I'm just a little heftier than you. I think that's what it is. I mean,
yeah, we'll go with that.
You can't see this.
So look, pick the suitcase that suits your body style and you'll be fine. Go try them all out.
Tell us now, also, you travel as a musician, you travel every which way. You travel on planes, you travel in cars, you travel on trains. Tell us about how much you love solo road tripping and where should we travel to follow in your footsteps?
Well, I just love, my favorite thing to do on my own is to get in my car and drive around America. Anywhere in America, I love it. The Southwest is incredible. It depends on the time of year. I don't like being very hot, so I would avoid it during the hot months. But I just love being on the highway.
That's a really unconventional perspective.
I love being on 40 West, where it's just me and all the truckers and nobody else for
40
West, miles in a straight line. Yeah.
Wait, but why?
And I can go like 100 miles an hour and there's no cops and it's just so brilliant and freeing and there's nothing out there.
Is it meditative for you? What's the glory?
I think it must be. You know, I have a lot of ideas in the car. I come up with a lot of things for songs and, you know, art ideas and just problems in my life in general, problem solving. When I'm driving, there's I don't know. Moving that fast, it just does something really good to my head. So I like that. I like driving when I don't have to stop for anything. And I can go for like 9 hours without, you know, needing to take a break. So I really, really like it.
I'm giving you a point because I've done that drive on 40 West like a bunch of times. And I tend to find it quite torturous, in fact, because there is literally nowhere to stop, even if you just need a pee break. There's nowhere, literally nowhere to stop. And I feel like you've just made me see it in a whole new way.
Well, you know what it's nice to do when you're not on a time frame, you're not trying to get anywhere by a certain time. You know, it always sucks when you're on your way home. You're like, oh, I just want to be there already. That's different. But when you're just going, it doesn't matter. You know, it's great. It's a really great feeling and one that is so rare in life to have that where you're just like, look, I can just do whatever I want.
This is the ultimate, the ultimate. It's all about the journey, not the destination.
Joy of the journey.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think road tripping on your own is underrated. That road trips always feel like something you get people to pile in the car and it's an adventure. And there's something wonderfully independent and meditative about being in a car on your own.
In fact, when I was born, I was born in California, and my parents moved the whole family to Miami when I was like 3 years old, and my dad drove with all of our stuff. This was before the era of even CDs, right? And he drove with a voice recorder, a tape recorder, and he narrated over a series of who knows how many cassettes all the things that he saw as he crisscrossed America. And that's
But I do that. That's so cool.
That's what you do.
I love that.
My dad's also a musician, by the way. So maybe there's something to this. And now
there's
I'm inspired.
Some need to record everything, whether it's useful or not. Just this. It's kind of funny. I recently found I was doing an audio book, but it's hardly an audio. It's more of a just a sound sculpture thing for my book, Karma. So I started reading all this stuff and I was like, well, reading is just boring. Reading out loud is boring. So it started turning into this whole other kind of art piece. But I found all of these old cassettes, cassette recordings from my car from when I was like 18, 19. And they were funny.
I think we should have that as bonus. I think we should have that as bonus content. Allison, we want to let you get to your next road trip. But if people want to find you on social media, follow what you're doing, follow where you're going, where can they find you?
My Instagram is amosshart. That's it. That's how you find me. And if you want to write about art or the book Karma, it's info@allisonmosshart.com.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Allison. This has been so much fun.
Thanks for having me, you guys.
I want to travel with you next time.
Yeah, seriously.
So how did Allison score, Nikki? Hit me up. How many points?
All right. Allison got 4 points. One for always checking her luggage. And it sounded like she actually checks multiple bags. She's a total maximalist and she sold me on that style. Number two, Baraka and Green Vibrance are the vitamins and hydration powders that will solve all of your life's problems on the road or at home. Who knew? Number three, analog film. I love this idea of being able to relive your vacation a few weeks after you've taken it in this beautiful artistic medium that feels like it's been forgotten. And number four, the meditative power of driving is not to be overlooked. And in fact, it will reignite the joy of the journey for you.
The solo road trip is underrated. I'm going to take one.
Thanks for listening to Travel Genius. I'm Nikki Eckstein.
And I'm Mark Elwood. Do you have a favorite travel tip or hack? Or do you have thoughts on what you heard about today? We want to hear them.
Just drop us a line at 646-324-3490. If you leave a voicemail, we might even play it on the show. Or you can find us on Twitter and Instagram. I'm at Nikki Eckstein. That's 3 Ks and no Cs.
And I'm on Twitter at Mark J. Elwood and Instagram at Mark Elwood. If you haven't subscribed to Travel Genius already, I would ask why not. But of course, you can do so on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And while you're at it, please take a moment to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts. It helps more people find us. This show was produced by Topher Forges. Francesca Leafy is Bloomberg's head of podcasts. Thanks again for listening.